Blog Talk Radio.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on nature for the enemy. They have a policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media to just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them. That's straight from Mike P. Jump on your...
Okay. You got it.
I got it. with my Chicago person.
I want to know what got graded on your...
Said that again?
You sent me a text that something was getting braided, and I thought you said your what got what?
No. Oh, my God. No, I missed your call, dude. And I was getting my eyebrows threaded.
Yes, instead of getting waxed, they use a string.
Right.
Well,
that shit hurts.
Fine. All I was saying was I didn't have my glasses on. I thought you said you had your box threaded.
Yeah, I know. I got that text back. I was like, what the fuck? It's so bad. Oh, my God. So, how's everything in California? Nice and warm and comfortable?
Absolutely. A slight chill right now because the sun went down, but it's about 65 degrees.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here in a pair of boxers, T-shirt.
That's what I got on. The hell?
Well.
Exactly.
But, Rusty's old lady texted me a little while ago, Kale, and she's going to call in, so... I'll let you guys...
Yeah, Phil told me to send you a message on that, and I did, and then he just told you. I know. See?
Yeah, I know.
So what do you want to do?
But,
so what do you want to do? Stop this, and when she calls in, we'll gear over to her?
Yeah. I mean, you know, everybody was still talking about this... bike being run over, you know, this guy getting run over.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But if you look at that video, in my opinion, the guy comes down the ramp and he breaks into the pack.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm looking at stuff, this biker attack video, who's the real victim? The real victim is the guy that got run over, broke his legs, broke his pelvis, crushed, and his back broken, and he's never going to walk again. That's the real victim, as well as the other three guys that got run over because the guy panicked.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's a really touchy subject. I'm seeing it from both sides of the fence there. You know, I can understand, obviously, the people who got hurt. That's just a terrible situation in itself. But I think the whole thing could have unfolded just a little bit better.
Well, now NBC News says, the dangerous new breed of biker gang seeks internet glory taunting police.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it says
a new endangered breed of motorcycle gang is popping up around the country, say authorities, as packs of young bikers on high-speed crotch rockets want to take over the world. The fuck, where are they writing this shit from?
Yeah, they were talking...
From the sheets that tell them what to put.
Well, if this wasn't such a slanted article, I don't know what is. Basically, it paints all riders with the same brush. I wish the video never hit... the internet, because now we're all going to pay a price.
Yeah, well, they were showing little tidbits on the news, too, and they took an anchor out for a ride with a state trooper, and they were talking about these biker gangs that cause so much chaos and can get speeds of up to 150 miles per hour on motorcycles, and they taunt the police and everything else. And, you know, why do they got to label it a biker gang? Why do they got to label it as bikers? Those are people, those are idiots. Those are idiots. That's really the bottom line to that, you know. But they just want to, you know, and I've heard a couple of people talk about that today, that they want to stereotype all bikers into one category once again. And unfortunately, with this whole incident, they are using it to their advantage.
Well, they're trying to. I mean, they're trying to. You know. Yeah. All right, let me see if this got a video. Okay, this is the same. This is the same. Now they go to where they're trying to pull the guy out through the window. That's all bullshit. Let's see what this one says. Okay, here we go. Hope it doesn't play a commercial. These fuckers always want to play a commercial. As well as try and knock me off the air. This is crazy shit.
NBC News presents Education Nation. Empowering students with the tools needed.
Alright, we don't need to hear that bullshit.
It is a scary and grisly piece of video, and if you've ever been driving a car and found yourself in a swarm of oncoming motorcycles, it may look very familiar, but what happened in New York this weekend took an ugly and violent turn, and as NBC's Stephanie Gosk reports, it's repeated all across this country.
As motorcycles chased a family with a small child up Manhattan's west side, 911 calls flooded in to report the terrifying scene.
You know what? Nobody says nothing about the 6,000-pound fucking weapon he was driving.
Smashed the business executive's windows, pulled him from the car, and beat him. His wife and child were unhurt.
The defendant's license to drive is suspended.
One of the alleged motorcyclists, Christopher Cruz, was arraigned in court today, charged with reckless driving and unlawful imprisonment. The prosecutor says Cruz and the other motorcyclists chased the SUV after his bike was bumped when he stopped short in front of the vehicle.
He had absolutely nothing to do with the beating that occurred on 174th Street.
The family of Edwin Mises, another rider severely injured and possibly paralyzed when he was run over by the SUV, is defending the group.
They're not a gang. They don't have to wear jackets. They don't wear the same clothes. They're just a family.
But law enforcement officials around the country say these groups are growing in numbers and aren't easy to stop. Videos are posted online like trophies. In Dallas, riders taunt police in pursuit. In San Francisco, motorcyclists break through a police blockade. In St. Louis, riders take over the highway for high-speed wheelies.
You kind of chase them because they're crazy, that they endanger themselves and others. There's been several incidents where several of them have been severely injured.
Some of the groups go out just to cause havoc.
New York State Trooper Heather Sinkowitz says they brace for trouble from motorcycle groups every weekend when the weather's nice.
How powerful are they as a group?
They're very powerful. There's, you know, depending on how many there are, their motorcycles can hit speeds of 150 plus.
150? In New York City, more arrests are likely for a confrontation so frightening it's shining a light on a growing nationwide problem. Stephanie Gosk, NBC News, New York.
I don't know. I mean, I hear it, but I don't believe it.
Yeah, this is going to pan out to be one big mess.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the anger of having the drivers of the motorcycles run over and stuff, but I can't see, I don't know, I mean, the caravan was at fault, obviously, for one thing or another, but I don't know, they had a family in that car and everything else, and it blew into one big outrageous mess. I mean, people were injured, obviously, and then...
Stacey, you're coming down the ramp. Coming down the ramp at 50 miles an hour. You look in your left mirror, and all of a sudden you see just a sea of fucking headlights. What are you going to do?
I don't know. A sea of headlights is like, you know, I mean...
Are you
going to
cut in?
Are they going to what?
You going to cut in?
No. That's something
okay,
I wouldn't do.
That's what this guy did.
But then again, I'm educated to the fact of, you know, that's the problem. There's just so much wrong with the whole scenario.
Okay. I'll give you that one.
You know, I don't condone any acts of violence that end in more violence. And yeah, there was a rise of emotions, and I'm sure some of them emotions couldn't be controlled, but as there were innocent people on the bikes, there were innocent people in the car, and it's the innocent people that got affected by all of this, along with the people that got injured. I just have a...
Hey, the guy when he drove over people.
No, I'm not saying he. I'm saying his wife, his three-year-old in the car. What did they have to do with anything?
Okay.
You know, they weren't driving the vehicle. And like I said, I just see problems on both sides. I don't know. That's just the way I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Let me see. I haven't heard back from her, so I'll let you guys go where you wanted to go. Which one of these videos did you want me to play first, Nora?
Okay. It doesn't matter. There's two links that I sent you both in regards to about
all right,
the topic, and then one video.
Uh-huh. Okay. You want the video first, or you want to talk about the link you sent me?
We'll do the video first, and then that way it puts everything out in regards to what the topic will be.
All right, because that's about 22 minutes.
Yeah,
that's a long one.
I'll stop it here and there, but if it plays long.
Prostitution is often called a victimless crime, but in the case of human trafficking, the so-called prostitutes themselves are the victims. And as we learn more about human trafficking, we discover a cruel world cloaked in utter evil, a world where mostly young girls, but also boys, are bought and sold into the sex trade. It's a multi-billion-dollar business. We start our investigation by heading to the cradle of human trafficking in North America. Located in southern Mexico, about 80 miles outside Mexico City, is the town of Tenancingo.
The community of Tenancingo is a community that is located in the state of Tlaxcala, on the south side, right next to Puebla, and the traditions we have here are good.
Jose Rojas is the president of Tenancingo, which is the equivalent of a mayor in the United States. What Rojas doesn't mention is that his town is home to a global criminal network controlled by a few select families.
Human trafficking, slavery, is the second largest business of the crime after drugs. When they take 1 pound of drug, they will sell it once. When they take a girl, they will sell this girl 30, 40, 50 times a day, many days without rest.
Rosie Orozco is a former Mexican congresswoman turned human rights activist. She points out that human trafficking is estimated to be a $32 billion a year industry fueled by corruption and human repression.
lot of money to the state.
It is a way to make a lot of money. And it is something that society easily accepts. There is too much money to be made. The statistics say so. It is the second most profitable business in the world.
Emilio Munoz Borguecos is the director of a Catholic anti-trafficking group based in the Tenancingo region. He spoke to For the Record at the risk of retribution by the traffickers.
Tenancingo is where they are more established, and the network of families operates in the country and also abroad. These networks have routes to take women in two states of the Republic. They also traffic Central American women who pass through Mexico on their way to the United States.
In this region, the pimps are revered by young boys who aspire to have their status someday.
Because it is accepted, they grow up with the idea that even if women suffer, you become rich and successful. What they see is glamour around them. Sports cars that nobody else can afford, like Mustangs, Hummers, Audis, Camaro, big villas, any women they like. So watching all this, they want the same thing. Plus these pimps, most of the times, are part of the family. The fathers, brothers, grandfathers.
With the help of Rosie Orozco and a Mexican filmmaker whom we'll call Julio to protect his identity, For the Record obtained this exclusive video of the town and its annual festival celebrating the sex trade.
Well, obviously everybody says that the festival is a cultural tradition in the state of Tlaxcala and also in the municipality of Tenancingo and other places nearby.
They do these carnivals where people from all parts of the world that are pimps will bring their objects, they call it like that, merchandise. They are girls who come to Tenancingo and they show them off like they were trophies.
When I interviewed the head of the municipality, he said things were not as people said, that there wasn't a stigma. People say it is a cradle for trafficking, that in Tenancingo's municipality, everything is bad, that there are bad people, bad men.
Yes, it started with some of the families, and it began to grow. This happened a long time ago, and unfortunately, it grew. But now, thankfully, people are being more conscious about this situation. We live here, we get to know each other, we know what we are doing. We are going to take your crew around, and you will notice that there are no bars or nightclubs.
Yet in the town square, the pimps assemble for their annual show of bravado.
Those people that were whipping each other in the feet were indeed the pimps. To the left were women, girls in miniskirts, short dresses. That's when I began to realize that they were hiding something. The authorities of the municipality as well as the town itself.
No, not that way. There are little girls who get dressed in short skirts. That's the way the dress is for the dance, and only for that moment. This is actually like a competition, because we have six dancers, so they get dressed in different colors and different types of dresses.
Matilda was just 15 when she was taken from her family and sold into the sex trade by a man named Noe Mendez Guzman, also known as the Bear. Matilda told For the Record about her experience at the festival.
At the carnival, a group started to fight. Noah's crew fought another crew. The girls are called La Princesa. And if he loses, I have to be with the other crew, every one of them. If the other crew lost, he would get together with the other crew's girl. If he lost, I have to be with 20 men.
Guzman's crew lost that day.
He drugged me that time, and he gave me a lot of alcohol, so I could not feel anything. 20 pimps abused me sexually.
Guzman and his family controlled the lives of more than 150 women.
The government denied the subject, and they were saying there are not that many networks. There is nothing to worry about.
I have received not so nice comments saying that we sell girls here, that we do money laundering, that we have bad things right around the corner. But no, It's the contrary. If you take a look, we don't have any of that.
In the rare times help is offered, it comes at great risk.
I was working in Oaxaca, and there was a client who was from the police, and he wanted to help me. There was another girl, though, who would tell her pimp everything. He, in turn, would tell no one.
Guzman confronted Matilda.
I told him I did not know who he was talking about. He started hitting me. He hit me and left bruises that covered all of my body. Every inch of my body was covered in bruises. My whole face was bruised. My eyeballs were bruised and red. I was completely beaten up. He kicked me, hit me with cables, sticks. He bruised me completely.
After the incident, Matilda was forced to go to the United States to work for Guzman in his American network.
So I left because he said, I will take your kids. I will say that you are working as a prostitute and I will go to the parental authority. And he said, I'll kill your family. Remember, you have a sister. I decided to go to the other side. I passed through Reynosa. From there, I traveled on a boat. And later, I walked for about 5 hours under the heat of the sun. We got to Texas by foot. And I crossed and quickly ran to the truck because immigration was there.
Matilda ended up in Atlanta, a city that has earned a reputation for underage sex trafficking.
She was brought to the United States, to Atlanta. And she suffered so much all the time of her captivity. She was enslaved. She was a sexual enslaved.
In Atlanta, it was worse than in Mexico, because if there were 20 men in an apartment, you have to withstand the 20. And if there were 30 men, you have to withstand 30.
Matilda was eventually sent back to Mexico, where she had planned to escape with a girl named Esmeralda. That is, until Noé Méndez Guzman discovered she was seeking help from another man.
They told the girl they had proof she was trying to get help from a guy, so he killed her. Noé shot her in the head, and after that, another one of his pimps shot her in the legs. And when I saw her falling on the floor, I ran and hugged her. I asked her to hold on, because we planned to escape together. I asked her to hold on, do not leave me alone. But the girl didn't make it. She died.
In August 2012, after years of bribing law enforcement to evade arrest, Noé Méndez Guzman, the man known as the Bear, would be tracked by the FBI and finally arrested by Mexican authorities.
Yes, most of the arrests have happened because the persecution was started in the U.S. With these examples, you can see the state's weakness. They were talking about the Bear being one of the most...
Well, if you don't know what's going on, it's pretty eye-opening.
Say that again.
If you don't know this is going on, I mean, I've heard it, but not to this accord.
Yeah, well,
there's certain hubs. I'll phrase it that way. There are certain hubs where human trafficking comes from. Chicago is one of them.
Hey, and
many states.
And the three highest for national human trafficking is right there where you are, Phil. Los Angeles, San Francisco,
and
San Diego, between 14 and 17,000 a year in them three areas.
Yeah. They every once in a while I hear about something, some hotel they raided or something, but they caught a guy who, 79 years old, bottle of Viagra, and going to a prostitution thing because he thought he was going to have sex with a 14-year-old girl.
The sex trafficking generates $32 billion a year just in the United States alone.
Yeah, and that's just here. That's not including... other countries that do Russia, Serbia. I mean, it's everywhere. It's a money maker. It's fast. It's easy. Most of these girls, women, you know, boys, men, they're, you know, 40 to and plus with customers a day.
Yeah, and they're having a tough time, too, keeping track of, like in your area, Phil, the illegals that are smuggled over the border, because a lot of them are sent into trafficking. So those estimates of 14 and 17,000 could be off by a few
thousand.
I know.
I heard last year that they were bringing some. They brought 15 women up here, and then called down to their families and told them if they didn't send $5,000, they were going to be turned into prostitutes.
So they paid
the $5,000 for. And how they got over here.
Yeah.
Right. And some of them, the only reason why they're brought into the human trafficking, like say if, we'll use Mexico as an example. Say if there's women that are working for next to spit money per hour, okay? If something is owed, these men put them out there. One way or another, they're going to get that money. You know what I mean? So it could, some forms can come in regards to what is owed to someone, and they put them out for human trafficking. And they don't stop just in regards to, okay, your debt is owed with us, you're done, we're done with you. You know what I mean? They'll keep going until when most of them, they'll commit suicide. I mean, it's disgusting, you know, and no matter what, whatever agencies are trying to contain it, to stop it, to, you know, nip it in the ass, it's not happening because they're finding other ways, other forms of doing it. If you're working in a titty bar, you know, there's people that will come in and they'll, you know, promise anything. Hey, you know, come work for us and you can make a lot of money, more than what you can make in here. You know, so in one form or another, human bodies are being generated, period, for money. They don't care.
Yep, and a lot of the cantinas down in Texas that are right along
the border.
Yeah.
They have built-in brothels in the back that, you know, there's not much you can do about it down there. They have things, you know, it's a very dark world, and they've tried to get people to infiltrate the trade, but, you know, when you're dealing with $32 billion a year, that's going to take more than just busting a local brothel. Right now, today, as, you know, fact as the minutes go by, there are over 300,000 children in the United States between the ages of 12 and 14 that are being sexually exploited at this moment. Those numbers are way too high. There's not enough things in place to protect the victims to be able to stop this trafficking, and it's spreading like wildfire, because the bottom line to it is sex sells. There's a lot of twisted individuals out there, and if you've got the right amount of money, then, you know, you can get pretty much anything you want nowadays. But they've taken in and busted like doctors and stuff who've had employees quote unquote working for them for 19 to 20 years. You're talking, you know, multiple people in slavery to do many different tasks, whether it be clean a house or, you know, other inappropriate things. And it's brutally vicious and it's brutally real. And the problem is that when you bring up sex in the media world, or you bring up prostitution or sex trafficking, everybody just kind of gets a cringe in their stomach, and, you know, you hear the typical line, oh, if that happened to somebody in my family, I'd fucking kick this person's ass. You know, right now in this day and age, it's going well beyond that, and people have to think outside of the box and get real to a very, very, very scary situation that's unfolding, and nobody seems to want to deal with it or know how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Let me finish this.
Dangerous dealers.
I think there is a lot of corruption in both sides of the country. I mean, United States and Mexico, both countries, they have people who have allowed these horrible crimes.
We showed you that celebration of human trafficking in Tenancingo. Well, you should know that similar events are held right here in the United States, namely in Chicago, Atlanta, Las Vegas, and Memphis, where pimps gather every year at conventions called the Players Ball. When For the Record returns, we take you to a trafficking destination in New York City, and you'll meet an American woman who spent her teens as a sex slave in the suburban Midwest.
They call it to the area where it's around Queens and Brooklyn, where they have a lot of pimps that bring girls from Tenancingo and the around Tenancingo, and they take them to the United States, and a lot of them goes to Europe.
Believe it or not, the first time I came into contact with sex traffickers who were doing business with Queens was on the Van Buren Strip in South Phoenix, Arizona. There, the coyotes had brought all these young girls, underage girls.
Curtis Sliwa is the founder of the Guardian Angels. He and his group have been active in exposing human trafficking networks since the 1970s.
The Johns were coming in and knowingly coming to the pimps because they were selling them what they called in the streets underage meat. And they just had an insatiable appetite for that. And some of these girls were runaways. Some of them clearly were brought in from parts unknown. They didn't talk the language. They didn't know the culture.
Some of them, they go and find some children, some girls are 12, 13, 14. And they, the older ones, take care of the little ones. They show them how to do the acts, the sexual acts.
And it becomes like an assembly line. It's really sick when you see the conditions. We're not talking the Mayflower Manor here. We're not talking the Manhattan Manor. We're talking down and dirty, low budget, as skeevy and low class as it can be.
According to a 2012 New York Daily News article, the New York Field Office for Immigration and Customs Enforcement arrested 32 sex traffickers in 2011, and 26 of them were from Tenancingo. But the business of human trafficking in the U.S. goes far beyond Tenon, York, and Atlanta. It has also spread to the heartland.
We have a really wide variety of Johns as well. In our human trafficking study, we asked the victims who were interviewed in that study, who were your Johns? What were their professions?
Melinda Sykes is a spokesperson for the Attorney General's office in Ohio. She was part of a study that helped identify the buyers in the sex trade.
We got a very wide variety of things. Attorneys, judges, public officials, law enforcement, drug dealers, but also we got pastors and social workers.
If we allow slavery to happen in our country, at the end, it will reach our children. It will reach our own daughter.
Really, I think it's important to note that these victims could be from anywhere. They could be men. They could be women. We have some victims that came from very upper middle class neighborhoods and were trafficked right under their parents' noses.
I moved around a lot because my dad was a big executive for a major company, and he would get promoted and transferred. And we moved to a new area outside of Detroit, Michigan.
Teresa Flores was 15 when she was forced into sex slavery. Her story is almost a blueprint for many victims.
I think these guys saw me as the perfect target. They made one guy in charge, and he, we call it groomed, but he just kind of spent a lot of time with me, always around in school. I mean, this is right in my high school. You have your typical boyfriend model where there's a pimp who actually recruits a girl by pretending to be a boyfriend. And one day he asked me if I wanted a ride home from school. And I was 15. And I thought, well, this is great, you know, because by then I've got a crush on him. I said, sure. And we get into his car, and he didn't take me home. He took me to his house. You know, I had that feeling inside that something wasn't right. This goes on in your small communities. Toledo, Ohio, for example, is a very big city with human trafficking, and the FBI actually considers Toledo as one of the recruitment cities. I thought, you know, I know him. I go to church with this guy. He goes to my school. Yeah, you're being silly, Teresa. And so I went to his house with him, and he was just like, hey, come on inside, you know, I'll show you around. And again, I had that feeling, but I was like, no, you know, it's going to be fine. He likes me. And so I went inside, and I got drugged, and I got raped. And several days later, he came to me and said, we have pictures. And he blackmailed me.
Well, I think it's important to remember there is a difference between your average prostitution and human trafficking. And really the touchstone of that is going to be, was there force, fraud, or coercion?
They would take me out of my house in the middle of the night. They would just call my phone and say, now. And I would have to sneak out. And they would deliver me to very upper-class, elite homes and neighborhoods. Where I would be taken to a small room in these finished basement areas and locked away while man after man would come until they were finished and would take me back home again. Nobody had any idea that this was happening, and I wasn't talking. I mean, I didn't tell anybody because they said, we're going to kill your brothers. You know, we're going to kill you.
It's very terrifying to know that there are these predators who are out there preying on our children every day.
They watched me constantly. I mean, I was working a part-time job. They would come in there. I was babysitting. They would call. They always knew where I was.
And I think that anybody who's engaged in the human trafficking effort will tell you that the penalty for Johns is much too low.
The customers were all, you know, men that they had contacted or contacted them, guys that ranged from high school age to 60.
And the people who are running these networks are actually pretty sophisticated and very savvy and very eager to not get caught. And if you have terrified those girls into not telling anybody, you're pretty safe. So it's pretty low risk.
They had plans to just not let me return home one night, and they wanted to set me up in an apartment, bring high, you know, elite clients to me, but my dad got transferred, and we ended up being able to move without telling, you know, my friends, without telling anybody, and we moved 1,000 miles away, so I was able to escape by moving away, but even then my parents didn't know what was going on.
While Teresa escaped, the pimps who ruled her life continued their operation and never saw the inside of a jail cell.
Nothing happened. They still lived there. They were never prosecuted. There's nothing I can do. It's a 10-year statute of limitations for rape, kidnapping, you know, molestation, any of that. There was no law against human trafficking prior to 2000. And so there's actually nothing that I can do. But even if I could do something, even if I could prosecute them, I would have to think about that seriously. Because I would be even more afraid of my life than I am now, than I was then.
Remember the pimp. The pimp's orientation, the pimp's brainwashing is, I'm doing this because I love you. Now, we all reject that. We say, like, crazy? What do you think? I have all the furniture upstairs and rearranged in the wrong rooms? But if that's what you've been subjected to at an early age, you've been locked in a closet, you've been abused, you've been whipped, and then all of a sudden the pimp kisses you and says, I really love you, I'm doing this for you. Imagine how confusing that would be.
It's something that will always be there. If that guy, that man that trafficked me walked through the door right now and said, Teresa, let's go, I would still go. Even after all that I've done and where I'm at now, I would still go with him. And it's so sad that they still have so much control over me and over everybody else.
Teresa Flores is now an author and activist who raises awareness for domestic sex trafficking and sexually exploited children. When we come back, a for-the-record update.
Go ahead. It's unbelievable, man.
Well,
see,
you know,
this is where it's hard because, sorry, Stacey.
Right.
As you're hearing that section right there, as you're hearing this woman talk, she came from upper middle class, okay? But there are women that have been abused or girls that have been abused verbally, physically, what have you. They think this is normal. So when they leave and they come across these gentlemen, they think, my God, they're so nice. Somebody's being nice to me because their self-esteem is so low. And before you know it, like this woman stated, they get a hold on you. That's it. And it's hard to break, to get away from them.
Go ahead, Stacey.
And hopefully they don't traffic you out of the country, and then you're really stuck.
Well, you know, I'm gonna read a small paragraph here that I have in front of me. And I want people to really, really think about it. It says, even though the U.S. offers protection for trafficking victims, few victims seek the government's aid due to fear of corruption, fear of deportation, or fear of reprisal with their family. Many victims of trafficking are citizens of countries with corrupt governments that actually aid trafficking, where victims' home countries lack reliable police systems. Trafficking victims are hesitant to reach out to the law for aid. In addition, because the trafficking victims are in the U.S. illegally, they fear deportation back to their home countries. Deportation can often leave trafficking victims at the mercy of their traffickers once again, and it may cause harm to their families because if they're deported back to their countries, a lot of times the trafficking group is right there to basically catch them coming over the border, and there's even more help to pay. So, you know, just with the simple fact that we have Americans being trafficked, you know, from one state to the other, and we have illegals or legals, it doesn't make a difference. Also, on that aspect, two, I'm sure there's a lot more going on that people are not going to report, and that's the problem. We don't have enough information. We have a lot, but not enough. We have some laws, but not good laws. Like you heard with that woman, there's only like a 10-year statute of limitation. As far as I'm concerned, it should have the same statute of limitation as murder. There should be none. It should be, if you're able to get your hands on these people, you're able to, you know, do what needs to be done. There shouldn't be, after 10 years, you know, you got to look over your shoulder again because they're scot-free. That's how these people are never going to get shut down. And something really has to be done. And, you know, with that comes a whole another show of, you know, the organ trade too, which comes from sex trafficking. People need a kidney, people need this, that, and the other. They're using these kids for organ retrievals too. But like I said, that's a whole different topic. We can go on and on about this stuff because it gets really, really deep and really, really dirty. to the point where if individuals pay thousands of thousands of dollars for, you know, they'll put an itemized list. They want a blonde, they want blue eyes, they want 12 years old, they want, and these people will go out and single-handedly, you know, find a victim, kind of like what you heard. They're groomed for the process.
Go ahead.
It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. It can happen on both sides of the fence.
Yeah. Let me, there's about maybe 2 minutes left.
Before we leave you tonight, we have an update on the story we brought you on privacy in America. In our report, we showed how the government has been collecting and storing information on U.S. citizens without a search warrant. Since that report aired, the director of the National Security Agency, General Keith Alexander, started pushing for new liability protection for businesses that share sensitive information about potential threats with the NSA. And the ACLU obtained documents from the IRS using a Freedom of Information request. They discovered a 2009 IRS handbook where the agency stated the Fourth Amendment does not protect emails because Internet users, quote, do not have a reasonable expectation of privacy in such communications, end quote. So much for reasonable expectations. Thank you for watching For the Record. I'm Lori Dew.
Well, she blew that.
Yeah. But Stacey's right. I mean, in order to seriously crack down here in the States, in regards to human trafficking, laws have to be different. They have to be updated. They have to come with a stiff penalty. You know, when they found those four women in that home in Ohio, you know, and the guys got away with it. Oh, let's just hang ourselves so we don't have to face prosecution. Come on. They knew what they did was wrong. They took those poor girls away from their families.
And
those families mourned, thinking that their daughters were dead and they were only so far away from home.
Yeah.
Eunice, what do you say?
Where do you want me to start?
What? Join in.
Listen. This has been going on for years and years and years, and like in anything that we try to fight, the people that want to make the money, they're going to make the money. You find one way of shutting them down, they find another way of starting it up.
Eunice, the problem is that people think of sex trafficking, you think of this beat-up, run-down building with 20 girls lined up in a row and men of all walks of nature coming in and out. And yes, that does exist. But this stuff is so dirty. It goes all the way up to the top of the political chain.
Well, of course it does.
That's the real reason right there why they can't get a better grip on it. Because if you really start exposing some of the aristocrats that pay for, you know, 12-year-old maids and 14-year-old cooks and everything else, that's still part of the same game.
And they still cover it. They still find, because of the power that they have and the monies that they have, you know, and it's something that, like I said, they find one way of shutting it down and another way to open it back up again.
Right.
Let me just tell you my experience today about abuse, okay? I told you my daughter is in a relationship that has just ruined her two daughters and herself, and she cannot find a way out, you know? I can find a way out because I was in an abusive relationship, you know, but I was stronger than she was. Well, today I went and picked her up, and her young daughter, who's 19, said to me, I just seen her 2 days ago, and, oh, hi, Nanny, how are you? You know, blah, blah, blah. So today she says, oh, what the fuck you're here for, she says, just to cause trouble. Well, you know something? I feel very well. I got out of that fucking car. And I went up and I grabbed her by the head of the hair. She was sitting on the stoop. And I pulled her face right up to mine. I said, let me tell you something, you little cunt.
Oh!
I says, you'll never have an opportunity to talk to me that way again. I says, I feel like punching you right in the face. Let's call the cops. So she says, go ahead. So I did. I smacked it right in the face. And I turn around, I get in the car, and my daughter and I are driving down, and about not even 3 minutes later, cruiser car's behind me and pulls me over. So he says, ma'am, he says, did you just hit your granddaughter? I says, yes, I did. And he says, can I ask you why? And I told him. He says, she called you that? I says, see, officer, there's always three sides of the story. You know, my side, her side, and the truth. He says, you've been around. He says, go ahead. He says, it's good you smacked her. You know, but she pissed me off. And the whole moral of the story is, if my daughter had not picked that asshole over her two children, they would have had a better life. Because that's all they ever heard in that relationship, him calling my daughter, you know, these dirty, rotten names, and my daughter putting up with it, you know? And
that's,
so
that's
now
where
these,
that's where the mental breakdown comes in. Because
that's right.
The verbal abuse just mentally breaks you down until your brain just shuts down and you're like
right.
A walking zombie. You're just numb.
And her two daughters treat her the same way that he treats her.
Yep, because
you know,
they've seen him do it, and
that's all they heard.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I'm sorry that the guy's, you know, I hate to see anybody die, but he's dying of cancer, and he can't die fast enough for me. But you want to know something? She'll still take that mental abuse from her daughters. And I said to her in the car today, D, you know, I was in a mentally abusive relationship with your father, but I was strong enough to walk away and raise you kids, you know. And I didn't get married until you were all out of the house. I says, when they passed out strength, where in the hell were you? You know? And you know what really pisses me off, Stacy?
What?
She was an alcoholic and a drug addict. She hasn't touched drugs or alcohol in 27 years. So can you tell me if she had strength enough to do that?
It's you know, some people, and I've learned this through my own life and through the eyes of other women, some people just, they deal with things so differently, and they feel that they can overlook the abuse for the sake of the family structure, and they don't realize that they're damaging the family structure. It's when the brain shuts down and you don't give a shit anymore because you're used to being shitted on, that, you know, this type of stuff holds into play. I'll be brutally honest, since we're airing things, several years back, and I brought up this fact about my knees being broke, you know, due to different things. You talk about arthritis, whatever. It was due to a severe abusive relationship. I was thrown out a second-story glass door, and I landed up with three broken ribs, some broken knees. I have severed tendon in my hand, which now my hand doesn't cooperate with me anymore. And I landed up with animal fecal E. coli bacteria because when my hand went through the glass in the door and I hit the ground outside, dirt got in it. But the point to this story is that I stood with that motherfucker for 10 years. And everybody that knows me knows. I mean, I've popped a man or two in their face before just for getting out of line in my presence. I look at the 10 years of that, and even myself, I have to stop and take a deep breath and gather it all in. And I say all the time, what was I thinking? And the fact of the matter, I wasn't, because you just reached the point where you just, like I said, you shut down. And
I had
you
been
know,
there, Stacey. I had been there in my first marriage.
I told everybody that I think, you know, everybody has a different form of belief, but I'm going to tell you what, I thank God and all the powers that be. The day that happened and I got rushed to the hospital by ambulance and I had two major operations, because I realistically think if that did not take place, I would still be with him, just for the simple fact that I overlooked the black and blue eyes. I overlooked the ripped out hair. I overlooked objects being thrown at me for the sake of, we're going to keep the family together. And it's just, once you roll into the whole abuse cycle, it's tough, whether it be sex trafficking, whether it be verbal abuse, whether it be physical abuse. Once someone has been able to penetrate your self-esteem, it's a long ways to climb back out. And it's a sad, vicious cycle, you know?
Well, let me tell you, the first marriage, sorry, Phil, but he was a Marine. And they taught him, I'm not saying Phil, but I'm telling you, they taught him. He was the greatest thing that walked down the pike. And
for me, the guy told me I was 6'6" and don't take shit from anybody, and it stuck.
Well, let me tell you, this guy was in the Marine, and he was an MP down in Norfolk, Virginia. I had four children. My oldest boy, he was 13 pounds at birth. This was his first child. My two girls were born in their seventh month, all right? Not due to the fact that they were just born in their seventh month. It was due to the fact that he threw me down a flight of stairs for the second one, and I went into labor. And then for my second daughter, we had a fight, and again, he pushed me down the stairs. But I went into the hospital and had her, and of course, you know, when you come out of it, and I think I've told the story before, I heard my husband say, "We have a wonderful son." And I knew I had a fucking daughter. And back then, you used to have to go into a 6-bed ward. And they had curtains that they pulled around each bed. And my husband was in the next bed with his so-called girlfriend that had just had her baby, his son. And we had little stepping stools that you had to step on to get into the bed and step on to get out of the bed. And I'll never forget it. My mother says, "That's Buddy." I says, "No shit." And I got out of bed, picked up the stepping stool, and hit him right on the... I had to stand on my tiptoes, but I hit him right on the back of the head and split his head right open. And that's the one thing that I never, never wanted to believe, that my husband had gone to bed with another woman. And that's when I was able to walk away with nothing.
Wow.
You know? So we've all been in an abusive relationship, you know? But I told my daughter years ago, her daughter said to her, "Mommy, don't bring him back. He's mean." And she still brought him back into the household. So her life is ruined unless she opens up her eyes pretty soon. She's 50 years old.
That's another thing right there. It's when you become codependent too on another. You know, half the cleaning, half the income, half the...
Stacy, it's not half of anything. She's always paid for everything.
Oh, wow.
Everything. I mean, they don't even have an apartment. Her and her daughter and him are living with a hoarder.
Yeah.
My daughter used to be meticulous. Meticulous. You know, and today I caught him in a lie. He nonchalantly come over to the car and he says, I don't know why I have to put up with that bullshit, meaning the young kid. And he says, I give her $1,000 a month. So Deanne had gone over there and then come back. And I says, Dee, did he give you $1,000? And she says, he gave me nothing. I mean, he was standing right there, you know. I says, why do you people have to lie about this shit? You know, I mean, it's just sickening. And I cannot wait to get on the plane in 2 weeks and get the fuck out of here. You know, I mean, that's just how I feel. I mean,
why are you subjecting yourself to all this stress when you're dealing with your health issues?
You know something? You're right.
I would have just picked up my daughter and left. And left the other ones there with
her. You know, I know I shouldn't have to do that. You know, I know that better than anybody. And I won't do that anymore. But the reason I went there is because she, when I wasn't home, she come to Daddy and asked him for money. And today she got her check and I wanted to make goddamn sure he got the money back. Because this $100, $150, or $200, you know, that adds up, Phil.
Yeah.
And I told her today, there's no more, Dee. No more. Enough is enough. You're 50 years old.
Is this the one that was trying to get the parts for the Harley?
No, that's my daughter, Kim.
Oh,
that's
okay.
My other daughter. She's the real strong girl. She's, you know... She's like I am. She can cope with things, and she faces it in the face, you know. But this one here, I think when my God passed out brain, she was hiding behind the back door or something. I don't know. You know. I just, well, but today was a drawn day, and I come home, and I says, you know something, Paul? I can't take this bullshit anymore. You know, if you're stupid enough to let her take money, then that's it. You go get it. I'm not doing it no more. So, you know how some men just like to make themselves look good? But she's living with a hoarder. The woman's about 300 pounds, 400 pounds, and she cleans this woman's bedroom. And she doesn't make it to the bathroom too often. So, I don't know.
Wow.
But about abuse... You know, that's mental abuse. You know, now I know why she says to the doctor, yeah, I'm thinking of committing suicide so she can get away for 5 days in the hospital or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
But it's...
Fran just chimed in. Go ahead.
Well, good evening, everybody. It's
good evening.
Interesting listening. I had actually... had written to Phil and said, on average, one out of every four, one out of every five girls in high school is actually being thumped by their boyfriend. That statistic, by the way. And it goes all money neighborhood. It's not just the poor people that go through that. I was one of the lucky ones because when my husband had threatened me, actually, I guess he was the lucky one. And the reason I say that is when he came across the room to thump me, which was a mistake, of course, you hear about women that snap. Well, I snapped and took this man across two rooms, and I was holding him off the floor by his throat. Now, the only thing that saved his ass that night was I was actually looking to grab my butcher knife that I've had since I was 11 years old. In order for me to go get that knife, I would have had to let go of his throat. And all of a sudden, reality came back. So when I hear of a woman that has actually snapped and killed somebody, I'm one of the lucky ones because I fell through the cracks and didn't actually do it because reality came back. When a person is in a loving relationship and that's what they see as love, being hit or what have you, that also comes from daddy abuse. So you're going through generation after generation of this type of behavior. So you're asking a lot of generations of training to be broken. This is not an easy task. A 50-year-old woman, she's already, if she were to get out of this relationship, turn around and find another person just like
to do it to.
That's right.
All right.
She would not be able to break the cycle. And I don't, you know, what is the answer? I have no idea. Because unless they're in that type of a relationship, and until they can see and learn that that is not a relationship, that nothing's going to change. And as far as giving money, it's kind of like giving money to a drunk.
Yeah.
You can give money to a drunk, but and they'll swear up and down, they'll never drink again. They'll get that $10, $50, and they're going to go buy a bottle and they're going to be drunk. And so that's the choice.
You know, when I get, there's a lot of, right, down where I work, there's a lot of panhandlers, okay? And a lot of times, they'll, you know, they're standing there with a sign or whatever, you know, and, hey, man, I need, you know, I'm walking to lunch or something. And, hey, man, I haven't eaten in a couple of days, you know, and you smell the booze. And I go, look, you want something to eat? I'm going in there to get something to eat. Buy you something to eat, but I'm not going to buy you another bottle. Oh, well, you don't understand. No, I understand, dude. Been down that road. Been clean and sober for a long time now. So, you want something to eat? I'll get you something to eat. You don't? You're on your own. Well, it's fucked up.
You know, it's a sad case, you know. Another thing, I got a call Tuesday night from one of the senators in Boston telling me that the Cardinal has asked to meet with the Senate to talk about this bill. And that really kind of pissed me off. So I got on the phone and I made a lot of phone calls. And I told a few of the senators, if you meet with this Cardinal and give him, you know, opportunity to talk to you about this bill, then we are all going to be there. You know, every one of us is going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
It just, you know, I said to the Speaker of the President of the Senate today, who is a woman. I got her on the phone today, and I have met her several times. And I said to her, 33 years I have been fighting for something like this to protect our children. I says, in 33 years, how many children do you think in Massachusetts alone has been sexually abused?
Oh, that's a bad question.
And she goes, I have no idea. I says, what would you say to over hundreds of thousands? Let's say 500,000 children. And I'm not even padding it, you know. I says, and you're going to allow the church to tell you not to pass this bill because they'll lose money. And she says, it's not going to happen, Eunice. I says, well, I'm telling you, I hope not. I hope not. So we'll just see. We'll just see. We'll know before I go to Florida. You know, I mean, he's coming back from Rome to Rome this week. He's in Rome talking to the Pope. He got called over to Rome to talk about this. So we will just see what happens.
There's a really, really good...
Pardon?
There's a really, really good movie, and I'm sorry I don't remember the title of it, but it has to do with a priest, and it was in the eastern state where he took privileges on the deaf boys, and they kept moving this priest around, and it finally did explode with everything, and there was nothing they could do because of so-called deadlines.
The Statue of Limitations is what it's called.
Yes.
The Statue of Limitations at one time. Who am I talking to? Fran?
Yeah.
Casey? Yeah. The Statue of Limitations in Massachusetts was 3 years at one time. We finally got half the bill passed to 55 years now. To have them prosecuted. The whole thing is that the church did this a long time ago, and when this took place with my son 33 years ago, nobody knew what pedophilia was. In the Catholic Church.
Oh, these people knew what it was. It's just that priests wouldn't do that kind of thing.
Well, naturally. Naturally, you know, that's what it was, because they were up on a pedestal. But years ago, as priests were going to the seminars and that, if they had a drinking problem, it would say that problem. It would never specify that they were an alcoholic. It would specify that it was that problem. If a priest was diddling with little boys, when they used to call it diddling, you know.
I remember that.
That was called this problem. And the reason I know that is because once we filed charges, we were able to get Father Messier's personal records. And that's how they specified. He took 2 years off from the seminary. And they knew he had this problem, but they still ordained him. You know? I mean, it is so corrupt. I mean, so, so corrupt, you wouldn't believe it. So corrupt. And, you know, someday, Phil, I'm going to send these papers to you so you can read it yourself, you know?
Okay.
Similar
so corrupt.
The government's corrupt, but putting that aside, similar to women and being assaulted and the priest and so forth, again, even if a child were to say something, they end up being punished twice.
Not now. Not now, friend. Not now.
You know what? Fear.
Back then.
Even now.
Who wouldn't believe them? It's
the fear. Hey, you know what? Mommy, Daddy's been touching me. You think Mommy's going to believe? And this goes right back to, this is an age-old problem. Well, of course, Daddy wouldn't be touching you. Oh, darling, Daddy loves us. And looking the other way, even though they know that Daddy's doing whatever he's doing.
Of course. That happened in my family. It was four girls.
Hey, it's still
four
not
of us.
That's now, still not changing.
You have to teach your children from an early age that nobody but nobody but nobody, daddy, uncles, brothers, nobody touches you. You have to teach them. You have to start teaching them at 2 years old. You know, that's a known fact. You have to start teaching them. You know, it's a scary process.
You still run into the problem that mommy is going to take daddy regardless of what daddy is doing. I mean, now, daddy may not even be daddy, real daddy to these children. That part doesn't matter. But mommy is going to blame the child.
Well, she's a very sick person if she does, because I'll tell you something. I never blamed my child. I believed him from day one.
That's you. That is not average. That is not the average, darling. And you can't stop the cycle until people own up to and respect what is going on. If nothing else, at least investigate it to see if it is real or not. Now, personally, if my husband was actually doing something like that, he wouldn't have to worry about the law, because there wouldn't be any law involved.
Trust me, I've seen Fran get pissed off. She's telling the truth.
I only get ticked off occasionally.
I know. That's okay.
I'm not getting a whole lot of shoes, which is upsetting me.
I don't know what to tell you on that, because somebody, I was at Bill's today on the way home, and somebody took two pairs of shoes out of the bag.
Oh, okay.
He goes, okay. Hey, he goes, we're getting brand new boots. Here, look. And he goes to show me, son of a bitch. And I go, what? And he asked Kyle and he asked Mike. No. Somebody took the fucking shoes out of the bag.
Oh, my. Well, look at it this way.
They needed them.
But that will come back at them, you know. That will come back.
That's the yin and yang, and I believe in that.
Yep.
It will. Yep. But you know something? If someone actually came in and took those shoes, then there's probably a really, really good reason. And I wouldn't wish them ill, because that takes a really tough person to do that. And to risk that and risk the embarrassment of getting caught, the chance of getting caught at it. And what do you say? I need these shoes because I don't have any home? Because, again, that's a double embarrassment. So the person may have really needed them.
Yeah.
And I don't have a problem with that. I mean, sometimes we do start at home first. I mean, Sunday, I should have some shoes. Monday, students at the college are supposed to bring me shoes. I reminded them today. But again, I mean, you are looking at people that are, I'll get to it, and they didn't quite get to it.
No, but I don't want to deviate from the topic, because Warren Stacy did a lot of legwork to do this, and I told them they could do whatever they wanted with this part of this show, and they're probably gonna. I would say this is Tuesday's show right here, so you guys go ahead.
What's being talked about, by Tuesday I'll find the website. I used to be part of a website of trying to help break the cycle of women being trafficked. And, I mean, San Diego, it happens all the time because we're so close to the border. Because once they get them on the other side of the border and on a plane, they're gone. I mean, these are mail-ordered sick individuals.
Yeah, and social media does not help with the trafficking and prostitution, too. We've seen the major breakdowns right on Craigslist, which everybody's familiar with, Craigslist. They have prostitution and trafficking sites there amongst a lot of different internet sites. And the problem is like I said before, it generates $32 billion a year. They're able to hire technicians to make these sites that the government, et cetera, can kind of not get into until months on down the road. And by then, again, you've got more people lost. And as we heard tonight, there's long-term effects from severe abuse. In the video that you aired, the woman who was sex trafficked said if her abusers were in the room and she was told to go do something, even though it was X amount of years later, she probably still would, because long-term effects is the mental breakdown. You're suffering from post-traumatic stress. You possibly could have been put within the use of heroin, because a lot of these people will dope you up, and once you become an addict, you're at their mercy. It gets even worse. There's not enough aftercare for these people. There's not enough things in place to stop this stuff. And the biggest thing is there is not enough awareness. There's not enough people talking about it. And even, you know, like Eunice says, it goes back for probably hundreds of years beyond our thought capacity. But with everything we have in place with modern technology and people, et cetera, we should be able to bite down on this stuff. And it needs to get in control. It really does. And I know someone talked about generations being trapped into slavery, and that goes with the immigrants that get illegally brought into the country, and they're raising their children, who's raising their children, still in debt to the original person that they were able to smuggle out of the country. And it's such a vicious chain. And when you think you've got one outlet, you're not three steps back, because there's three other things in play. And like I said,
go ahead. I'm sorry. No, I was just going to say, coming from a woman of my age and being here a lot longer than you girls have, I have learned in anything, money talks and people
Well, that's what I said at the beginning. You get these
I'll tell you have to be a fighter, you know? I mean,
but the
senator just said to me today, 33 years you've been fighting this? Yeah. If I give up, who's going to take over? You know? I mean, really. And that's the way it's always been. The most powerful people in this country or in the world are insurance companies. Great Catholic Catholic Church. And that's the truth. I mean, they have the money to fight this stuff. They have the money to fight this stuff. And like I said before, and it's not just with pedophilia. I mean, you take two cases. You take my grandson, who was used to show that, yes, we do indict white people. Or you take a Puerto Rican that did the same act and got, 6 months in jail for stabbing someone. I mean, money, I'm telling you right now, that's exactly the
and
way
I think,
it is. It's going to be that way for the rest of our lives.
And as long as society keeps having this sex war, if people can watch reality TVs like Big Brother where people having sex in bed. We can discuss sex on the news. We can discuss sex in the social media. It's about time people get off their goddamn high horse and educate their children, because when a child's taken out of the home and put into trafficking at, from the ages of 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14, I don't care when you get that child back, they are never going to be the same, ever.
Well, you take two daughters. Who's this, Stacy or?
Yep.
You take two daughters. I have two daughters. And I taught these girls that there's only two things that you can keep and call your own as long as you don't allow someone to take it away from you, and that's your mind and your body. I had one that listened and one that didn't. What can I tell you? You know?
Yeah, but
I know they're all individuals, you know.
But, you know, the thing is with your daughter, the sad part is that she's got a choice to make with some of the individuals, like even your son, that wasn't a choice he chose. That was forced
upon him.
And when you get these kids who are scared, taken out of their homes, shipped halfway across the country, put into situations that they, at 12 years old, probably don't even have a goddamn clue about.
Right.
That right there is.
The world has changed so much that I remember letting my children walk to school when they were 7 years old without going with them.
Yeah.
You can't let a child walk to school alone nowadays.
Nope. I used to walk to school, too. We used to get dropped off at my grandmother's. My school was 2 blocks away, and I would walk my 5-year-old brother there. You know, I was like 7, 8, and he was like 5, and there we were, you know.
You can't do that anymore.
Nope.
You can't do that. Because we have made a haven for pedophiles, you know, and that's what it boils down to.
You know, I'll never forget the reality statement of how much child molestation, sex trafficking, pedophilia was all swept under the table when I had a conversation with my grandmother, God rest her soul. She died at 95 last year. Said to me that stuff didn't happen back in her day, that the priest came to the house and everything was good and people didn't do that. And I said to her, I said, the problem back in your day was it wasn't
talked believed it.
About. Right. I said to her, it was going on, Meme. And she didn't believe me. She was like, oh, no. It's the corrupted society now. It's all this computer stuff. And you know what? That's fine. She was old in her age. She wanted to believe that. But right there was my reality check that we've got a whole generation like my grandmother who are terribly misinformed or have other beliefs due to what family values were installed in them. And that's a big problem right there, you know?
Well,
and
you know what it is? If you are back in those days, that if you didn't believe in God and you didn't believe in your religion, you were going to go to hell.
Right.
I mean, you never hear anybody talk about the devil nowadays, do you?
No.
Ever. You never hear them talk about the devil, you know?
And they used to say,
you have to fear God. Well, no, you don't fear God. God is supposed to be a good person, you know? But I mean, it's the way they were brought up. I have a friend who does everything for the Catholic Church. She runs a thrift store. She runs everything, okay? And the priest that she knew for all these years, finally they caught him, and they got him for pedophilia. Do you know she stopped talking to me because I work in this area that I spread a story about this priest? But they threw him out of the church, you know.
Right.
And she's my age. And that's her belief. Some women that don't marry and just dedicate their life to the Catholic Church, doing good deeds, you know.
Yep.
It's unbelievable. I think I was born way before my time. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because there was never a question in my mind. Never a question in my mind that this could not happen.
I'm going to say that, I mean, we keep saying Catholic Church, That's not the only religion that...
But when I say Catholic Church, and let me explain it, because that's the biggest church. Yes, it happens in other nationality, other religions, I understand that. But you got to understand,
you know,
the Catholic Church is the biggest.
Just because of the audience, I don't, you know, just want to clarify that we're picking on the Catholic. That's because that's the one I know best. I mean, I was brought up Catholic until I was kicked out in second grade. But even then, that's the one that people recognize most for certain things and behavior. But it does happen in all types of
Religions. Right. Definitely.
It happens in every religion. It happens from the rich to the poor. It happens from people who are considered modern day middle class. There's no escaping it. And
no, there isn't.
Again, that's a big problem. We understand the Catholic Church thing because Eunice has been battling this for 30-something years trying to get stuff done. But it's everywhere. And if people, you know, are really thinking that it's just down to these organizations that traffic individuals or the Catholic Church, they're sadly mistaken. And I think the whole, you know, bigger stink on the Catholic Church part is because they've got the money. And, I mean, if you go back over hundreds of years, Christ, go back to the original Knights of Templar, the Catholic Church created these gladiator-type individuals to protect their doings, whether they were wrong, bad, or indifferent. And I think that's really, you know, the Spanish Inquisition and everything else. I think that's what people key into with so much with the Catholic religion is because money has kept them in a high state of power. And with that power has allowed them to do whatever they deem fit, which of course there was wrong decisions in that, but that's with every network clear across the board. Like I said, whether it's religion or whether it's a low poverty village where people come in the middle of the night and take your kids, because yeah, that does happen, you know, or you get a twisted individual with hundreds of thousands of dollars that puts his daughter up for sale for billions more. You know, he's a brand new virgin, 12 years old, who's taking her on the highest price. Don't kid yourself if you don't think that's not happening, because it is. You know, like I said,
it still happens into these countries, believe it or not.
This whole
they mix marriages, you know, they have fixed marriages in a lot of these countries, you know.
Well, that boils down to the like what I said before, the corruption of government. When you have a government in play that is not basically for the people, it's basically for their own doings, you know, it's very easy to manipulate things, and that's what a lot of these third world countries are. They don't give a shit about their poverty people. It's like, you know, if there's a price to put on a head, they're going to put it out there, and they don't care. And that's why a lot of the voices with these children, with these women, with men, with boys, they're not heard. Because these people live in fear, either fear of retribution from their takers to come back and possibly harm them or their families, or fear that the organizations have so much money that they can come back and take them again. And again, it's a vicious, dark, deep cycle. And where does it begin? Where does it end? You know, we could stand here and talk about this all night long, but, you know, something has to be done.
See,
more than what's being done.
See what happens, though, Stace? What happens is we can talk about this every single night of the week, but how do you get people motivated to help stop it? You don't, because nobody wants to take a stand.
Well, my bitch for tonight is that I think, again, because it's a sex subject, that is put on the back burner. It's something that's only spotlighted on a specialty segment of the news. It's just because too many people don't want their children hearing different things like that. They don't want that.
Oh, God, no. They have out my name.
But they're watching reality TV. You know, what gives, reality TV or, you know, information that could possibly educate your child on the do's and don'ts, or if they're put into a certain scenario, another scenario that could possibly save their life or the life of other people and in society?
But people, I got to say it to you. People always say it will never happen to me.
They actually say that.
It will never happen to me.
Well,
and that's what they do.
That also goes along with a number of the other groups that do the chanting and so forth to get you into the group and then do mind control, and you become their property.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you don't know no other life. You'll turn to these people for anything, and they're putting heroin into your arms. They're selling you, they're abusing you, and you will still turn because your mind has been totally shut down. You will still turn to them for everything that you have to do while in their care, and believe that they care about you, you know, and that's the mind breaking down to the situation you put in, and that's what I said, the long-term effects that come out of it. The collateral damage is lifetime full of scars.
Well, I've learned how to beat up my abusers, so, you know.
Everybody needs a unit next to them.
No, really, that's, you know, I don't care how big or how small you are. I had a grandson who was 6'6", and told me I was a bitch, and I pulled him out of the car. You know, I don't care. What are they going to do to this? Who's the judge going to believe? This 6'6" guy or this poor old little old lady with gray hair? You know,
depends
on the judge. Out of the car.
Depends on what
as
the
long
judge was greased.
Well, I'm telling you, that's the way I think, and that's the way I feel. You know, I will never, being abused myself, I will never allow anyone to abuse me ever again, mentally or physically. Well, now, wait a minute. I might let him abuse me physically. No, I shouldn't say that. Okay. Maybe Dr. Davis. Nora? Dr. Davis?
No.
But, we got to try to make...
It grew mold.
Yeah, well, I had fruit flies flying on them, so...
With a lot of what you're saying, it is unfortunate. And the reason it's unfortunate is it was like the response that you had received and you didn't expect. Well, that wouldn't be happening. And partly because they don't want to believe
right. That
type of thing could be going on in their neighborhood. They don't want to believe that their neighbor that they have known would do this to a local child.
Well, they don't wear signs, let me tell you. You know,
well, that's
the whole thing. And all you have to do, people, is get on the computer, put in pedophile, and put your zip code in and see how many of them are living. The ones that are registered that are living around you in a 5 mile span. You know.
Well, San Diego's loaded. But, you know, are you ready for this? Do you know where a lot of them move to, though?
Florida.
Florida.
Oh, no.
Florida.
Alaska, because they can get lost, and they still carry on.
Well, it will freeze off.
No,
but Florida is the worst. That's a one of the House representatives asked me down there if I would help them get a bill. They passed a little bill, but not a big bill. But they're all over in Florida. That's their haven. They go down to Florida. They really do. So
Phil, you got any input? You know, have you learned anything tonight, or you have anything you wanna say?
Ever too old to learn.
Huh?
Ever too old to learn.
Maybe you're too old to learn.
Hey, I had coffee with Hermes.
Yeah?
I had coffee with Hermes Friday. I mean, not Monday.
Let me finish. I'm always willing to learn, and I'm always willing to try and understand things, and I'm kind of stuck with this one because I don't understand it, how it happens.
How what happened?
Okay. How it's gotten so out of control, I would imagine.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
No, it's not that it's out of control. It's out.
32 billion dollars a year is generated just in the United States with sex trafficking. 15,000 to 17,000 children come out of the state of California every year into sex trafficking. Those numbers are terrible.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
When you get teenagers that run away, the police, you know, if they have a history of running away, they don't want to waste their time looking for them. And I would say probably 75% of them were picked up and taken someplace else for the sex slave, you know.
Yep.
Because we've lost too many teenagers. You know, too many of them.
The other thing you have to look at, and again, if a child is taken out of a home, they're put into a foster home, and you say, well, the foster homes are all checked out and this and that, and it's like, I have had foster children, and some of the stories that they told me about some of their foster parents, I'm surprised that these children have any wit left to them. Because to be taken from a bad situation, to be put into a situation where they're being physically and psychologically abused, and again, when you say that their people are listening to them, no, they're not. They're not listening to the kids.
Now, why do you think those people were able to get foster children? Because our wonderful welfare department that we have in this country did not have the time or the resources or the people to check these people out. You know, really.
But they never had the confidence of the children to get that information. They never had a doctor that was smart enough to be able to question, you know, doing their physical and ask them, is there anything going on? But again, with a lot of these children, there's your fear factor. Because if they were taken out of a home that's worse than the abuse that they're getting in a foster, they don't want to risk the chance of going back to the original abusive center. So you're back to the same problem. I don't even know if they have orphanages now in the United States. Well, I guess.
No.
That would be, yeah, I guess we still have some.
No, not really. Not really.
So the question goes back to, you know, where do we stop? Where do we look? How do we get that information out to the children that what is acceptable and what is not acceptable? And how do we get their trust?
Because you start with these children, like I said before. You have to. Parents don't allow their children to walk to school alone anymore. So that's something that we used to allow. And now, because, pardon?
They do here.
They do here.
Well.
Oh, God, yes.
Well, Well, here they don't, I'm telling you, because it's been so publicized.
You're saying children. But you know something?
I'm Chuck.
Our college girls are being taken off the street and being abused. And sometimes they're lucky enough to be able to admit that they were taken if they survive it. Because you already did hit upon the fact that the psychological end of it, they may or may not be able to survive that. And the question that I dislike most, or I should say the statement that says, oh, God, that was so long ago, get over it. And that, when that's said to me, my whole jaw just cringed. And to be honest with you, when that person says that to me, I would really like to choke them right then and there. Even better, give them a small taste of what it's like.
Because they can't rationalize it. Man, they can't rationalize anything like that unless it's happened to them. I had a girlfriend when my son was murdered, 2 months later said to me, you just get over it. And I said to her, you know something, Dottie? I hope to God you never have to be in my position of burying a child. And exactly 2 years later, her son committed suicide. And the first thing she said to me was, I'm so sorry. When people never dealt with it, it's easy for them to say, get over it. Or that happened a long time ago.
Yeah,
you know, it's so easy for them to say it because it's the same thing with anything. You don't get out and fight for cancer unless a member of your family had cancer. You know, you don't get out and fight for autism children unless you know people that have had them. It's the same thing in anything that goes on. If people have never dealt with it, they don't want to deal with it if they have never had to deal with it. So it's easier for them to say, get over it. When I go to a funeral, any funeral, the one thing that I remembered all the time was people saying, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. And I said that whole time, and then at that time we wake them 2 days and two nights. I said, oh, my God, I can't say this anymore. I can't hear this anymore. What I have done over the years is I just say to them, my heart is with you. You know, I can never go and say to them, I'm so sorry. I say to anybody, if you lost your husband, your child, your mother, your father, anybody, my heart is with you. Because I'm old enough to say that. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm old enough to say that to people. But it would be nice. Pardon?
I don't think that's an age thing, because even
it's not an age thing, but I'm just saying I've learned how to say that, you know.
Yeah, I mean even with people on so forth, they're not even aware of catching those clues that somebody's in trouble.
Right.
And I don't know if it's because of lack of experience that they're so naive, or I'm not sure what or why some of us take that up more than others.
Well, some people just wear blinders all their life. They're happy with the nice home and the husband they have and the children growing up and the picket fence and, you know, we've got a lot of them in this country that are like that. You know, really. A lot of them. And they don't want to deal with stuff like that. You know, and that's the sad part. That if we had more people that cared about what is going on in this country, anything, our government, you know, if we went on strike with the insurance companies for 2 days. You know how much money they'd lose if everybody stopped paying? You know, I mean, it's really. Now, if you think about it, if everybody in this country stopped paying say, for 1 month, didn't make their monthly payments, you know how much money the insurance companies would lose? Because everything is insured. Am I right, Phil?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's, when people just, oh, no, I don't want to take the chance in getting behind or losing it or whatever, you know. And the worst thing this country ever did was give the insurance companies the leeway to do what they wanted. Because they do.
They're doing it
they
now.
Do.
They're doing
yes.
it now.
They most certainly are.
Yeah, they locked down the government.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
You know.
I mean, I the last couple of days, I told you guys, I've been standing there, I've been walking through, and I see them at the ATM machine, and I'm actually seeing grown people cry.
Yep. You know, and it's sad. It's sad because you know something? We put those people in those positions. Because we didn't take time enough to look in their backgrounds, you know, in anything. Oh, we can get them out. No, you can't. No, you can't. You put them in there, and if you don't learn how to really do politics, you're going to have corruption the rest of our lives. Can you imagine what it's going to be 20 years from now?
I'm
glad
I
won't
know.
Be around.
Yeah, I won't be around either, probably. But
you know,
I'm worried for my kids.
Yeah, we all worry about our kids and our grandchildren. You know, we all do. But how much can you protect? Really? And it's going to get worse, and then this thing is going to blow up. You know.
Well, they say there's five things that'll destroy this government. They say he's already done three of them. So,
yep. We'll have a revolution that will be unbelievable in this country. And like I said, I hope I'm not around to see it.
Well, I know I won't.
You know, you will not have one. How can I put it? Because I'm not prejudiced. I'm far from being prejudiced. But in 20 years, you will not find one. How can I say it now? I don't want to sound like I'm prejudiced.
You're
but
not.
The mixture of, it's a mixture of our children's lives now. You know, in 20 years, it continues like this. There's not going to be any white race left in plain English. Americans. Let's put it that way. Not white, but Americans.
Only true Americans are Indians.
Oh, yeah. I know that. But I'm saying it's not going to be. It's going to be a mixture of Puerto Ricans and blacks and whites and, you know. I mean, it's beyond that now. And you know who gets hurt out of this? Are the children. Are the children.
Always the children.
Yep. Well, it certainly is. Because they don't care. They don't care. This generation that my children have brought up, they don't care.
I don't know
they
if
they really
it's
don't.
Yeah. I don't know if it's that they don't care as it is they have the younger generation right now, a high percentage of them have been so sheltered and so taken care of, so to speak, that they don't have awareness. They don't have the education from hard living. And
yeah,
that's
and they don't,
between us and the
they
kids.
Don't have any respect.
Have it.
and I have respect for the dollar. And that's a true fact. Very few and far in between have respect for money or their parents. Very few. You know. I have a great-grandson that has been thrown out of daycare. So what does that tell you?
He's thrown out.
I mean, it's just unbelievable. You know. Just unbelievable. My children said the same thing that I said. When I get married and I have children, they are going to have things that I never had, you know. And my daughters and my son has said, my children are going to have the things that I had to work so hard to get. Because, see, I always made them work if it was a paper route or whatever. And anything they wanted, they had to put a percentage of what they of their money that they worked so hard for to get. When my daughters got married, they just gave everything to their children. Their children have no respect for a dollar. It's give me, give me, give me, give me, give me, give me, you know.
Oh, still there. They're still at the give me, give me, give me.
Mm-hmm. You know, I say give me, give me, give me, and nobody listens to me.
Yeah, no.
Are you smoking a joint?
I don't. Huh?
You smoking a joint?
Who?
You.
No. I wish I was.
You don't want me smoking one, I'll tell you that.
Jesus Christ, please. Send me some. Do something. Oh, God.
Stacy's closing.
When I come on. When I come out to California, boy.
No problem.
You better have a whole bunch.
I know where to take you. Pick your own.
Oh, okay. Hey, listen, I did that once, and it was at Thanksgiving. And I went to that stupid refrigerator and stood there for a long time and couldn't imagine. I didn't know what I went in the refrigerator for. They said I had a coat hanger smile, you know.
Oh, God, that's funny.
It's the truth.
Now, that's funny.
Oh, my God. I'm telling you. Thank God I never got hooked on that shit. My life would have been so different.
Thank God for other people I didn't get hooked on it.
You know? God.
Well,
I don't know.
I talked to Hermes the other day, too. He's gonna call in Tuesday.
Oh, good, good. I had coffee with him and drove him around so he could get some paperwork done.
He's okay?
And, yeah. He's okay. I picked him up, and we went to one of this. I know I'm going to say it wrong, Pepino's Bakery.
Yeah.
You know, so we went there for coffee and we talked and talked and talked. And he's going to go back on after he gets everything else straightened out. So that's going to be good.
All right. We just got the 90-second button. So I thank you, ladies. And the two who started this, you need to continue for Tuesday.
Okay.
All righty, guys. Good night. Nice talking to you all.
Good night.
Good night, all.
Listening. Thank you for listening.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for
as usual.
Come in. But good night, all. Ready. I love y'all.
Yeah. Good night. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Talk to you later. Bye bye.